This episode of Continuing Mission is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for your smartphone, tablet, or desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm.
Hey everyone, I'm Rod Roddenberry, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Continuing Mission, our look at the ways in which fans are keeping Star Trek alive. I'm your host, Christopher Jones, and the primary focus of this show is on the fan series and independent productions that tell new stories set in the Star Trek universe. From time to time, we move beyond the extended on-screen adventures into the realm of audio dramas, and that's what we'll be doing today as we explore the 24th century missions of the USS Excelsior, NCC 2000C. Star Trek Excelsior, also known as Starship Excelsior, is an audio drama founded in 2007 by James Haney that follows the adventures of the fourth starship to bear the name of that famous great experiment captained by Hikaru Sulu. Set in the Delta Quadrant, the series has given us three full seasons of stories and is now into its fourth. Today I'm joined by James along with Matthew Blondine of the post-production team to learn more about the series, its history, the challenges of production, and the upcoming episode, At Death's Door. Hello, James and Matthew. Thanks for joining me on Continuing Mission this week to talk about Excelsior. This is actually a new series to me. It may be to many of our listeners, so I'm really looking forward to hearing about it tonight. How are you guys?
Doing great, Christopher. Thanks for having us on.
I'm awesome, Chris. Thanks.
Great to have you here. Well, James, most of our listeners are familiar with Matthew's history with Star Trek, like his background, how he got into fandom. He's been on this show before, some of our other shows. But I'd like to know from you, before we talk about Excelsior itself, how you got involved in Star Trek, and especially to the point where you decided that you wanted to do your own Star Trek audio series.
Right. I have no idea when I got into Star Trek. I know exactly when I got into Star Trek. I just don't know how exactly it happened. I was 4 days old when I saw my first episode of Next Generation. Both my parents were Trekkies from way back during the original series days. And so my first episode was Samaritan's Snare. And they would watch Next Generation about four times a week because it was on syndication. So they'd run it in reruns. Right. And Dad would watch every viewing of it so he'd get the whole episode. And I grew up watching those over and over again. My parents just thought I liked all the shiny colors and things, and that was why I quieted down for it. But then when Cause and Effect happened, I was like 9 or 10 months old, wasn't using words yet, but the Enterprise D keeps blowing up on the screen. And every time it blows up, I burst into tears. and they could not.
I hope your
parents
have that on video.
Oh, no. That would be great. They didn't realize what was happening. At first, they thought it was a coincidence. The second time it went up, I got even worse, and they thought, well, that's weird. By the third time, they knew, oh, no, this kid really likes Star Trek. So I've just always grown up in the Star Trek verse, and a lot of the things I do are Star Trek related in various ways, so it's not surprising I ended up here. The way I ended up in Excelsior specifically was I was writing mods for a Star Trek game, Star Trek Bridge Commander, and one of my...
Okay.
Team members said, hey, let's go and play this role-playing game called Star Trek Excelsior in Bravo Fleet. I said, that's great. So I joined the role-playing game, and then we went in the role-playing game one day. We said, we need some recruitment for this role-playing game because we don't have enough players. So let's start an audio drama because no one else has tried that before. And that's what we did. And we just got going. It very quickly took on a life of its own. The show never actually brought anyone into the game, except maybe one person out of 3,000 or 4,000 listeners. So it failed in that respect, but it took on a life of its own, and that's what I've been doing pretty steadily for the last couple of years in my fandom. But it's hard for me to imagine a world without Star Trek. I know that's not true for most people, but it's just the air I've been breathing since I was born.
Wow, great story. I love the story. Cause and Effect is one of my favorite episodes.
Oh, it's a great
episode.
It's
so funny that you're crying as a baby when the Enterprise blows up. I love it.
When I came back to it with a little more emotional maturity, it was like, oh, this is really cool. But at the time, it was just
Oh, what would have been even better is if you cried every time Beverly broke her glass. Okay, well, that's a great story. Matthew, can you imagine a world without Star Trek?
I gotta be honest, for the last 6 months, no. No.
How about before that?
Star Trek has been in my life for the last 6 months, like you wouldn't believe it, and more so now than anything. But no, actually, out of my life, no. I mean, I grew up watching syndication of TOS with my mom and my brother. And then when, again, I think I did mention this in a previous show that we did together. And when TNG came on, I mean, we were stricken. We saw the pilot episode. We were there, popcorn in hand, just waiting for the episode to be there. And then looking at my mom's face going, ooh. I guess it didn't like a lot of us after I've seen it a couple of times. First season was kind of like, yeah, okay, but then it gets better, right?
Yeah.
But when I was a kid, I mean, 91, I was like 14 years old. So for me, it was like, all right, this is new. This is Star Trek. This is awesome. And looking at my mom's face going, eh, no. But no, she caught on and she liked it, So yeah, it's, I gotta be honest, Star Trek has been a big part of my life and I guess of my mom and myself's relationship. Every time we talk, especially now when we talk about Star Trek, we talk about what I do on Star Trek with James and with Sebastian, even maybe darker projects eventually. Yeah, she's all ecstatic. She likes it. And even reviving my relationship with my dad, Star Trek has helped me do that. So. Yeah.
It's amazing how many stories there are like that. Somebody on the show, Emily, who plays Dr. Sharp, has talked about how her relationship with her father was really cemented a great deal by watching all of Voyager with him. You gotta get him started. There's so many parental relationships around Star Trek.
Yeah. Mine was with my father. We had that kind of relationship where Star Trek was important, and with my mother, it was, oh, that's that show with those weird aliens with bumps on their heads or something, isn't it? Why are you watching that? So she really didn't get it.
Right. Well, you got to start them young. I got my daughter watching already. She was born month ago. And I immediately said, well, you're 4 days old. It's time to watch Samaritan Snare.
Yeah. Right,
like father, like daughter.
Yeah. Well, same here. Every time I watch Star Trek, I don't watch it a lot, but because in Canada, its syndication is a bit off. The times are kind of weird. So, but when I get a chance and I can watch Star Trek or even listening to the audio dramas, sometimes I'll have the iPad running the audio drama and my kids will be next to me. We're on the bed trying to fall asleep. And especially my oldest, which my 6 year old, she'll go, Daddy, that's Star Trek. I'm like, yeah, that it is. Mm-hmm. And boom, she's asleep. You know, not to say it's boring. No,
I was going to say, what does that say?
About I think she likes it. I think she just likes it. And out of everything, like songs, you know, bedtime songs and medieval songs, that's what's playing.
Right. You've got to learn some good Klingon bedtime songs to sing to her.
Yeah, shit. Next on my list. Let me take that down.
All right. Well, James, let's talk a little bit more about Excelsior. We talked about the genesis of it there with your fandom and how it came about. Mm-hmm. Why Excelsior specifically? Now, this in the story, this starship is the fourth starship to bear the name Excelsior, right?
Right. Well, a lot of the basics of our universe were sort of defined by the fact we were playing a role-playing game at the time. I don't know how familiar your listeners are with them, but they're probably hundreds of role-playing games around the internet where you just pop in and you pick a character and you write a story collaboratively with other people and sort of comes together into some sort of a nonsensical story. But we had one that was fairly coherent and the basic facts of that story were the Excelsior Sea, were the four starship to bear the name. The role-playing game had been running for 10 years before I even got there. So when we made the audio drama, it was a fairly straightforward transition. Call the ship the Excelsior. Let's make it the fourth one to bear the name. Let's put it in the Delta Quadrant. But there's a lot now that we're there, I'm really happy with a lot of those things. Having a name like Excelsior allows you to draw on the big heritage that that name has in Star Trek.
Well, let me ask you this question. I had a discussion with someone on Twitter recently about Starship names and registry numbers and letter designations on them. And within canon, the Enterprise is, I believe, the only ship to have any sort of direct 1701 carried forward with a letter designation. Now, there are many ships that have passed along the name, but they've done it in the same tradition as the U.S. Navy, which is that the name is carried on, the history of the ship may be carried on, but the registry number isn't carried forward. It always changes. So here you have carried forward NCC 2000, and you have added the C designation to it. Is that something that grew out of the game that was established by others, or do you have a backstory for Excelsior and things that that ship, the original ship that Captain Sulu commanded, did that put it in the same class with the Enterprise where Starfleet felt like this is an extremely special case where we really should honor this registry number?
That was definitely our sense. This is Sulu. If anyone in all of Starfleet is going to get a have a captaincy that is worthy of passing on its name, it's going to be him. So definitely, this Sulu was captain for as far as I can see, probably decades, and was the only, you know, named canon captain during a lot of that period, because the Enterprise is out of commission. The Enterprise B hasn't been constructed yet. So he is at this pivotal moment in Federation history when they're transitioning from the cowboy diplomacy of the 23rd century into more of the formal, cautious 24th century next generation mindset. And he's leading that, sort of leading the Federation, leading Starfleet at least, during that period. So we just assume that he did a number of many monumental things that would merit passing on the name and as well as the registry to future ships.
Interesting.
Now, in our history, not every ship named Excelsior has been a sterling example of it. The USS Excelsior B, according to our in-show history, was actually
commanded by Captain Harriman Jr., who also made you think, really? No, I'm just kidding.
No, the Excelsior B was just it was launched with very high hopes, but then it just kind of didn't do anything. Its captain was terrible, and they ended up reassigning it to supply ship duty. So it's not quite the storied history of the Enterprise. But yeah, not actually a Harriman, but in that same proud tradition of Harrimans.
Yeah, we've been, I never liked Harriman, although they've really redeemed him a lot in the novels and made him someone who you can actually see as being captain of the Enterprise. But what we saw on screen in canon
was rough.
It was rough.
I loved his Star Trek card, the Decipher Star Trek card game lore for him just said he was having an off day. And I always hoped that was true.
It was all the bright lights of the cameras, you know.
Oh,
got a little bit flustered. Well, Matthew, before we talk about some of the actual past episodes of Excelsior, you're relatively new to working with James here on this production. How did you come to be involved in this?
I was doing a production of one of the episodes of Small World for Misfits Audio. And James Magata, who is from Mississauga, was the producer on there. And Captain John Tatterzak asked me to edit, to post-produce that that episode, with John, with Jim being the producer, and Colin, a guy from New Brunswick, being the writer. And as I was doing it and doing the edition of it, at one point Jim asked me, he's like, "Hey, would you be interested in coming on board with us at Excelsior, and being one of the post-producers?" And being a Star Trek enthusiast, my response was like, "Yes, bring me on. Let's go."
When and of course, Matthew, having nothing else to do.
Oh, right now, definitely.
You have all this free time.
and all and behold, I mean, it did not take that long. I think it took less than than what, 24, maybe not even 24 hours. He sent me my email to James. James replied, sent me the information to Sells, which is the online web tool that he built with another colleague, so that we can have the lines uploaded and categorized, and then we can assess them. Oh, it's an awesome tool. I gotta tip my hat to James and the guys. It's an awesome tool. You set up the production numbers, all the line numbers and all that.
Yeah.
Well,
that's interesting. Yep. So this is when we talk about independent productions, which is what this show is all about. And mm-hmm. we talk about audio dramas, and you're dealing with the scripts. So this is a tool that was custom built for the purpose of creating an audio drama and managing everything. Does it run in the browser?
Yeah, it's all web-based, web mm-hmm. browser-based. You log in, and then depending on your credentials, you're allowed to do certain things. Like, I'm set up as a post-producer, so I'm allowed to view all the lines, all the scenes. I can listen to the audio that's been uploaded mm-hmm. right there. Instead of just downloading it, I can automatically quickly listen to it and see if there's an issue with it, so that I can quickly send back an email directly to the person that uploaded the lines and say, oh, I got an issue with this. Can you adjust this, adjust that, or whatever? Or I could at least discuss with the director and James, you know, what can we do? Should we take it or not? So, and then everything can be uploaded. Like, once I've done a scene, then I can upload it to Cells. It sends an email to Jim and all the Jim, James, and everybody else on the production team that basically says, oh, Matthew just uploaded a scene. It's your time to... Mm-hmm. How did you put it in that email? Get off your butt and...
and review it.
And review it, yeah. As a post-producer, I will receive a copy of the email that basically says, James, it's about time to get off your butt and review this. it's basically... And then so that Jim and James and the other producers can review, comment, and send comments back. Then we get an email back, and then back and forth. So it's really real, especially with the structure that James has brought up. I gotta be honest, it's an amazing structure. It's an amazing way of working. I love the way we're working, and it's easy for us to interact between each post producers. I'll give you an example for the episode 403. Jim Smagata, our director, I don't know how it got into. We had a conversation. I was listening to... No, it was me, actually. I was listening to... I was starting to listen to all the scenes one by one off of Cells. Just to give me the global... Because I just finished the last scene of the episode that it was assigned to me. And I wanted to get a global feel of the episode. And I started to listen to the first scene. And something caught my ear. And it was easy for me to contact the post producer that worked on that scene and say, you know, there's something that caught me here. I think you should adjust it, because the intercom chime that he used was the old one. It was the old whistle. And mm-hmm. I used mm-hmm. the newer one. And it was kind of like, uh-oh, did I make a mistake? Because I was new on the production team. So I was like, did I make a mistake by choosing that one vice the other one? And so it was easy for us to communicate together on Cells and email, and we quickly actually adjusted that.
That's cool.
It was done in about 24 hours. That was
I gotta be honest, it was quick, because I mean, I contacted Mike came back saying that he had actually lost the SEX files. Mm-hmm. He couldn't do it, and then Jim basically said, oh, I'll try to do it. I turned around, said I would try. I picked up the scene. I exactly identified what it was, deleted that, added the new one, reposted it up, and then it was done. Within 24 hours, we had that scene back up and running.
Very cool. Yeah, I didn't know there was a system like that. That's very, very interesting. I don't know that you can produce that way.
I got to be honest. I work with James. I work with Sebastian. I work with Misfits Audio, Darker Projects Audio, and Gypsy Audio. And,
like I said, you had nothing else to do.
And yourself. I got to be honest. Like, I work for Trek FM as well. You know, one of the best Trek Trek channels on the planet. I'm not biased or anything.
One of?
Whoop, whoop. Okay, and out of all of them, that system that James brought up is amazing.
Well, let's talk a bit about the past stories, the actual episodes here, James. So, season one, The Excelsior Returns. Season two, Murder in the Blue Morgue. Season three, The Sword of Damocles. And season four, Ex Astris Mirificentia. Tell us a little bit about the past stories. What has the Excelsior been doing out there in the Delta Quadrant?
Right. Well, one of the things that annoyed me when I came into doing audio drama was that a lot of other audio dramas would start stories and then run stories their whole series and then never resolve them. And that just got very tedious to me because sometimes mm-hmm. these shows didn't finish. I wanted to avoid that. So yeah. I said, we're going to tell one story every season, and we're going to have a beginning, a middle, and an end so that our listeners are satisfied and so I don't go crazy trying to kill myself trying to get this all these enormous numbers of plot threads tied off. We're going to tie off our plot threads every year. And so that's what we did. The first season is a neat little story about a diplomatic mission to a matriarchal society. That's where we start to show that we're a show that wants to push the envelope. And the second season is a story about an intelligence conspiracy, which has its own internal logic to it. But the conclusion of that helps us lead into the third season, The Sword of Damocles, which is a much, much larger story, much larger than any we'd done before, because we were learning and we wanted to push farther. So we did this enormous story about the bluegills, the creatures from Star Trek The Next Generation, the little lizard creatures who took over people in Starfleet Command.
Yeah,
those dudes. The conspiracy. And then the Dexter Remick explodes. I love that scene. But at the end of that episode, Data says, oh, we got this homing signal. Dexter Remick was sending out a homing signal into the deep parts of the galaxy. And who knows when that will come up again. And of course, it never came up again because the bluegills were in behind the scenes replaced by the Borg.
Mm-hmm.
So we came up with a big story of what happened to the bluegills and how that relates to the Borg. And in so doing, had to send our people into peril they could not have imagined when they started this thing out in season one. That took like 3 years to do entirely. It's one season, but it took a long time to make. Mm-hmm. And then as we come into season four, we're finally saying, okay, we've told our huge epic serialized adventure. We've brought that to an ending. We spent the first episode of season four kind of tying off all the loose ends from that episode. Let's try doing some more standalone stories. We're going to keep having a serial arc running through the episodes, but each episode is going to have its own beginning, middle, and end now. So it'll be a little bit more like listening to a series of traditional Star Trek without quite so much plot havoc happening behind the scenes.
What kind of feedback have you gotten from listeners in that respect? Do people want to have they told you they want to have more of that type of story, or have they told you they really like the way that the past season arcs were put together?
Listeners have been very enthusiastic about season three, and we could go ahead and do another huge epic story arc like that, but I think it will, and we will, there will be more of those in the future. We still have some plot threads from season one that need to be wrapped up, but I felt that it was important that we give our crew and ourselves a little bit of a rest. When you do drama, you want to go up to those high points and then kind of come back down and then start to build up again. And so season four is a let's come down and let's build up again year. We're going to keep it very interesting. Where those characters are going to continue to develop in ways that people will not expect. There will be some huge twists as the season progresses. But you will also be able to enjoy each episode on their own, and we'll start to build up towards that fever pitch again as we get into season five.
Now, are you also going to do your Wild West episode during this season? You know how every series seems to have Spectre of the Gun, A Fistful of Data's, North Star.
You have a point. In the North Star, I guess yeah. DS9 didn't really have one. But
DS9 didn't have one. Voyager didn't have one.
Always the exception to all rules. Yeah. No, but we are still always trying to find an excuse to do a Mirror Universe episode.
Mm. Wait for it. Wait for it. It's coming. after the one I'm writing for you, I'll write that one.
yeah, we've got been getting stuff in for a Mirror Universe episode since like the second season, and it's just never quite materialized into anything because it's hard to find time for it. It's a perfect April Fool's Day episode, though, so it's going to happen. We always try to do something special on April Fool's Day.
Very cool. So those are the past episodes, and people can get those by going to starshipexcelsior.com/episodes, right. And you can download them right there. But you have more episodes coming up, as we talked about here, and you have one called At Death's Door, which will be coming up in the autumn, I believe, and we actually have the cold open for that. So let's play that for everyone here.
That's it. That's as fast as she'll go.
Distance of the way.
10,000 kilometers and closing.
Bridge to engineering. We need more speed. Dovan to Janaya, can you hear me?
Intercom's out. The wave's disrupting all systems.
Wave closing to 9,000 kilometers.
Do what you can, Bev.
Aye, sir.
Sir, if that wave hits us...
It'll tear through this ship like a piece of paper in a rainstorm of knives. I know what a null particle is, number one.
8,000 kilometers.
Casualties, deck 17.
I lost impulse and helm control.
We don't need them. Just give us more speed.
We'll be lucky to maintain this speed. Warp field geometry is degrading.
4,000 kilometers.
Sir, recommend we raise shields.
Against a null shockwave? Shields will be nothing but a power drain.
2,000 kilometers. Impact in 6 seconds.
So, James, tell us more about this episode in particular and what we can expect here.
This episode is actually written by a guest writer named Martin Fisher, who had submitted a script for us some years ago, and it's a part of a contest, and didn't win the contest, but we liked where he was thinking enough that eventually when we were coming to this fourth season of standalone episodes, we said, hey, come on back, do something for us. And he came up with this cool concept of what happens if the Excelsior crew meets Death. Just Death, the guy, the Grim Reaper. He shows up on the ship. How do we interact with him? What does that mean? So there's a species that can only be killed by their own personification of the Grim Reaper. Otherwise, they're immortal.
Hmm.
And they're on a mission to exile their Reaper. They're calling him the Bringer. And they're going to leave him behind on a distant planet so that he can never come and kill them again. But their mission goes horribly wrong at the last minute. And the Excelsior warps in trying to figure out what is going on and to execute rescue operations. And through an unfortunate chain of events, our first officer, Mr. Larock, is taken over by the Bringer and begins trying to kill people, which is bad for everyone.
That's bad. Interesting concept.
Yeah. As soon as I heard that concept, I said, we have to do this. I don't know how we're going to make it end. I don't even know what the middle is, but we're going to do this. And eventually we found a middle and we even found an end. But the idea was too good to resist. Something Star Trek's never done before.
What can you tell us about this, Matthew, from the audio production, the post-production side here?
It was my first episode to work on with the team that James put up together. And it was different. It was different. It was awesome experience. That's why I'm sticking in, right? Actually, talking about Bringer here and the episode, I'm going to just leave this to the audience. There is a link between Death's Door episode 403 and episode 8 of Star Trek The Continuing Mission, which is Cathedral in a Void. I'm just going to say that. We'll let the fans, once they hear for Death's Door, and I'll let them get the link, and eventually we'll try to come back to that and see if our audience will find it. I'll get back.
Win a prize. We'll send you a little Cracker Jack prize.
but there is a link. There is a link between between.
Send your proof of purchase to Matthew Blondin in Canada.
But no, it was really. I gotta be honest. It was funny because I started off with. I think it was just like what, maybe four scenes, James. I think Jim gave me what, four scenes, and
yeah.
And then something happened. We all pulled together, and I ended up with I think six scenes.
More scenes.
more scenes than ever, and It was just awesome. I could not wait to do more and more and more audio on it, and hearing the bringer get shape up and do what he had to do, and get the crew do what they had to do, and listening to the story, especially because I was doing I think it was like scene all the from 13 all the way to the last one's 18.
No, you got a big block there.
Oh yeah, I had a really, really big block. So for me, it was awesome because I was able to listen to the climax of the episode in one shot, and give my ideas and shoot some ideas back and forth, and it was fun. It's always fun to work with Starship Excelsior team. I really, really love it. And this episode, can't wait for the fans to listen to this one. It's going to be fun. And I can't wait for them to listen to 402. We're still in post-production, yeah. But yeah, but it's going to be fun. It's going to be fun.
That was weird.
Yeah, because
we've never produced episodes out of order like this. No. But the script for 403 was done and the script for 402 wasn't. So 403 got done and 402 is still going.
Yeah. And one of the things I loved is that when before we started 402, we had a read-through, which is something we never do. I haven't experienced with other production companies. And with a project that we're developing, myself and Sebastian, it's a page out of James' book that I'm taking, and I'll be doing is a read through, and I loved it. I loved the read through. It was awesome to get all the actors in one room or one Skype, and just listening to how they render it, and then listening to James, Jim, and the other producers and director, you know, giving hints and this, so we can iron out any discrepancies or any faults or anything, just to make sure that everybody's on the same page, everybody knows where they're going. And as a post producer, it's awesome to just listen to one good quality of their microphone and try to at least tell them, okay, please adjust that, just that, and try to do this with your microphone, but also to know right off the bat, what am I going to be expected to hear once I get the files in.
Right. Well, this is a good transition point to another thing I wanted to ask you guys about, as we're talking about post-production A, but now we're getting into the different microphones and all as well. Just like here on this network on Trek FM, you're dealing with people spread all over the planet with different computers and different microphones and different recording software. Mm-hmm. But you have to take that and try to make a consistent, polished product from it. I think a lot of people listening don't really realize what's involved in producing audio dramas or podcasts, and it might be interesting for them to know a little bit about those challenges. What can you tell us about that process and some of the biggest challenges that you've had and how you deal with those?
Well, one of the biggest challenges is noise. Noise reduction.
Biggest challenge.
Yeah, that's one of the biggest.
Just the by far. Ambient background noise.
Background, yeah. And I think the other one as well is, some people don't realize, is the room they're in. I've had, when I was doing a Doctor Who, which I am still doing a Doctor Who for Darker Projects, at one point, David Ault, one recording, I had to ask him to redo it. And the reason for it is, even without noise reduction at all, we still heard this echo in the back. Yeah. So even if I do anything, and we were actually, that day, we were two post-producers trying to do something with that. And we came to the realization, like, forget it. Ask him to recut.
So that's why you look at me right here on the camera. That's why I have the sound shield behind me, because this room that I'm in is just hardwood from floor to ceiling.
That's it. Mm-hmm. So it's really, really, that is, I gotta be honest, that's the biggest pain, is when you get a recording and right off the bat, there's an echo and there's a lot of noise.
And you know it.
Yeah, and you know it. And you know that even if you do remove all the noise, what's going to happen is the end product is going to be an electronic sounded voice. Like, we've experienced it with some of our hosts on Trek FM. Mm-hmm. And we've done our best to, and we always do. We always do, even on audio productions, we do our best possible. If you know,
but you can't control the environment in a lot of cases, because we're not in a recording studio per se.
A lot of people are limited to the hardware that they own. They're limited to the rooms they live in. They're limited to the neighborhoods they live in, even with the ambient noise out the back. So they have to just cope. So we try to avoid asking for recuts as often as possible.
Yeah.
And usually we manage it.
Yeah.
We usually can make it go without recuts. And that means we go into Cool Edit Pro or Adobe Audition and we strip out, we carefully find a silent patch without a lot of fuzz or distortions. And we use noise removal. We strip it all out. We'll go through and find all the popped plosives, the P's.
Yep.
The K's. I don't think S's. I know the S's aren't plosives, but I can't remember what they are. But they are super annoying.
Sibilants.
Sibilants. That's it. They're a bear.
Well, they're.
So you go through, and often
they had a big problem with that. By the way, in the Jungle Book, when they were producing that,
really.
You know the snake.
Yeah, the snake.
Oh.
Well, yes. They couldn't get it out. They tried. Software just
Wouldn't render.
A good portion of it is coaching actors. Here's how you record correctly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Please keep re-recording until you get it right. If we have time and you have the ability to re-record.
Yeah.
And then a lot of it is just painstaking work going through. Once you have dialogue files that are clean, it's actually relatively easy to put together scenes.
Yeah. One of the biggest help that the voice actors can do is when they record is traditionally they'll tell their name, what they're recording, and like introducing themselves. And what I found is when they go, okay, let me record right now just the ambient sound in my room for let's say 5 or 6 seconds, and then they stop talking, you listen to that, and then they start, and then they come back, and it's awesome for us to have that portion, because then we can take that portion and clean out everything.
Use it as a profile.
Yeah, their entire recording. Yeah. And,
huge. We've been trying to enforce that on actors.
That's something for people to remember too. I mean, if you're listening to this and you're a podcaster, that's really important too, that you do leave enough dead air for people to create a noise print so that they can actually get that stuff out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Great. Well, let's go on back to what's coming up next. So beyond At Death's Door, what can you tell us, James, about the future of Excelsior? What do you have planned looking further out down the road to future seasons?
Yeah, well, beyond At Death's Door, and it's the other episode we're doing right now, Guards Get Them, which actually, I shouldn't say it like that. I should say episode 402, Guards Get Them! Because if you don't shout it, it doesn't count. It's in caps.
The title's going to be in all caps, right?
Yeah, well, I took the actor aside. He's playing. There's the Excelsior hits a medieval planet and is trying to find out why it's being why it's detecting technological advancement on this medieval world. So they beam down and investigate it. And so, of course, there's a king, there's a princess, and I took the king's actor aside and said, "I want you to look up the collected works of Brian Blessed and just do that." And Brian Blessed is this classic actor. He was in Flash Gordon. He was in Doctor Who, and he said everything in all caps. he's on TV Tropes, and he's got his own page, I believe. It just says, "I am Brian Blessed, and I'm shouting." So that's the kind of episode that is.
Okay.
That's going to be a tremendous fun to do. Beyond that, we have a number of stories from guest writers coming up because we have this convenient standalone season. We have the opportunity to bring in people who haven't written for the show before or who have tried and not been accepted before. But underneath that, we have a larger plot thread, which I don't want to reveal too much about simply because it hasn't really gotten started yet, and I want to keep that surprise. But I would suggest that listeners pay close attention to every time anyone mentions the Iconians. The Iconians are built the gateway that allows the Excelsior to be exploring the Delta Quadrant. And to people who are just listening to an episode or two, that may feel like an incidental fact of our universe. And for most episodes, it is. But if you start to connect the dots and you listen to all the stuff about the Iconians, it begins to add up to something fairly serious, especially when combined with what we've learned in previous seasons about the Iconians and the Scions of the Stars, who are another species that has been mentioned on several occasions. So that's going to be sort of the underlying thing that ties the season together. And then we'll be building towards a fairly surprising conclusion to the season. And then we're going to start heading back into those big arcs, as I mentioned. We've got plot threads to wrap up. We've got new plot threads that are coming up in this season. So we're laying the groundwork for that here. In the guise, disguised as really cool Star Trek stories, we're actually just tricking you into listening to our last two seasons.
So in those arcs coming up in future seasons,
Yeah.
Aside from plot threads, because I don't want to reveal those because it could spoil stories from earlier, are there any new ideas that you're kind of like kicking around? Like, it would be cool to do an arc around this idea.
Well, we're always... One thing I'd really like to do is to get some Star Trek actors, some guest stars from the show. That's something that fan production seems to do on a fairly regular basis. Star Trek Phase 2, of course, has had Walter Koenig and George Takei over time, and a few others have done the same. We ourselves had the actress who played Trila Scott in Next Generation's Conspiracy for our season finale last year, Ursuline Bryant, wonderful woman. She was terrific. I would love to see a couple more of those sorts of episodes. Even though other people do them, they're still great. I love those Star Trek actors. And I would love to tell a story that takes place over a long period of time. Like Babylon 5. I don't want to spoil Babylon 5 for people who haven't seen it, but there's an episode in Babylon 5 that takes place over the course of a million years. That's really cool. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't want to do that in a single episode. It was too much for an hour, I think. It was an ambitious episode and it didn't quite gel for me. But if we had a few episodes to spool something out, we could do something really cool over that large time frame. Maybe not a million years.
That's cool.
I would love to be able to tell some decompressed stories.
Yeah, I like novels that do that as well, that follow the long-term.
Yeah, here's the characters. Here's the characters' babies. Here's their babies. And then here's this whole, the generations.
And here's their babies, and they're watching Samaritan Snare at 4 days old. And then their babies are watching Samaritan Snare at 4 days old for a million years. The only thing that changes is the format of the media.
Yeah, they're watching Samaritan Snare in 3D HoloVision remastered.
That's right.
That'd be great.
Excellent. Well, tell everyone where they can find the past episodes and also where they can keep up with production of new ones and then where they can find you personally.
Yeah, we are at starshipexcelsior.com. That is our hub. You'll have to forgive the website. It's a little bit old, but Matthew's working on a redesign. Actually, my job is to follow up with him on that.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that's still there. That's happening. Okay. So StarshipExcelsior.com is our website. Our episode archive is at StarshipExcelsior.com/episodes. We have a forum, which is accessible from the site. We're also available on iTunes. If you just look up Star Trek Excelsior, we're right there. I think we also show up if you look up Starship Excelsior, either way. And we have a Facebook page, which is our most regularly updated production news source. Although, frankly, I'm terrible at keeping production stuff up to date. I'm just like, the listeners will enjoy the episode when it gets here. Let's focus on getting the episode done.
Yeah, it's hard.
Listeners
to do
don't
all.
Care about my behind the scenes featurettes. They want shows.
Well, I think they do care, but it's really hard to do it all, right? So production always has to come first.
Focus on the show.
Yeah.
And there's a Twitter. We also do have a Twitter.
We do have a Twitter.
Yeah.
It's tied to our Facebook.
It's at ST Excelsior.
That is correct. And that's all available again on our website at www.starshipexcelsior.com.
Matthew, what about you? Where can people find you?
They can still find me at Captain Blondin on Twitter, and I'm on Facebook. And visit the show, starshipexcelsior.com. It's a great team. It's a great show. I invite everybody to go and listen to every single episode, catch up, because there's a lot of good stuff coming up.
Yeah, we're looking forward to it. Thanks again for joining me today, guys.
Thanks.
Thank you for having us. It was wonderful.
Well, this has been really interesting today, learning about Star Trek Excelsior from James and Matthew, but it isn't the only thing we've been talking about on the network this past week. So here's a quick look at some other things you may have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
It doesn't make any sense. I mean, you're dealing with people who are... stupid. I mean, stupid and just so clouded with bigotry and stuff like that, that it's just like, well, what can you say to them?
Earl Grey.
Oh, that's right, because there was like an engineer lady.
Yeah.
I think Geordi...
She's basically maybe? Ariel, and she wants more. She wants to see where the
Wait,
people
does she
are.
Have thingamabobs?
The orb.
I think that's the thing that Casey does is he's able to take what the writers gave us and portray a man who is going to do a 180, and you're gonna believe it.
The Ready Room.
in watching it again today, preparing for this, I was appreciative of the fact that Wesley was there going, gee whiz.
To the journey!
I did like that we got to see some Genes in Enterprise.
But that makes sense. I mean, it's kind of bridging the gap between 24th century and now. I don't want to see Captain Janeway in jeans.
Because you know they'd be mom jeans, right?
Commentary, Trek Stars.
I think that the term talk soup for geeks is actually very descriptive, which I still find very strange, because I still don't know how that possibly is an example that makes sense.
Yeah, there's a lot of people who watch, as they call it now, the soup.
I don't approve of that. That's disgusting.
Okay.
Literary Treks.
Each character had to go on a mission alone with Spock in a small craft, and that led them all to decide to leave the Enterprise.
I am not working with that guy alone ever again.
And introducing our newest show, Star Trek Axanar, the official podcast.
I've been having a great time experimenting with what works, what doesn't work. You know, what does a Klingon D6 sound like? No one really knows. We don't know what an impulse manifold or a fusion reactor on a D6 sounds like.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of these shows and find out what we're talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe. You can find them everywhere you get your podcasts. We're all over the place. Just search for Trek.fm or the name of the show you want to listen to and we'll turn up. If you're an iTunes user, you can go to iTunes.com/TrekFM and that will take you straight to our artist section there in the store. Speaking of iTunes, while you're there, leave us a review of the show, and not only Continuing Mission, but all of the other shows that you listen to on the network. You can leave us reviews in iTunes and Stitcher right now and get your name in the drawing for some great prizes. It's very easy to enter. You just leave a review and then go to trek.fm/review and submit the form that you find there. That helps us match you up to your name in iTunes and on Stitcher, match you up to the reviews. And every review you leave will count as an entry in a drawing for great prizes like a season of Star Trek on Blu-ray or DVD of your choice, some Star Trek novels of your choice, some original Starships Collection ships from Japan, and also a full set of our original Alien art illustration badges. Plus, if you review Star Trek Axanar, the official podcast, which I co-host with Alec Peters, you'll be in the running for a set of 3 beautiful embroidered patches from Axanar, which Alec is donating. So head on over and leave your reviews and be sure to go to trek.fm/review to get your name in the running. If you'd like to leave some feedback on today's show, I would love to hear from you. You can find me on Twitter. My username is C. Brian Jones, the letter C and Brian with a Y. I'm also on Facebook, facebook.com/CBrianJones. And I have my website at cbrianjones.com. And you can also find the network in these places. On Twitter, our username is TrekFM. On Facebook, we're facebook.com/TrekFM. We also have a community on G+. We have forums at trek.fm/forums. You can send me a voicemail through the website if you look on the show page in the left sidebar. You'll see a widget for that. Or you can just go to speakpipe.com/TrekFM and do it there. And all you need is your webcam's microphone. Or if it's a smartphone or a tablet, you can use the mic on there and upload it right to me. And I would love to hear your voice, so do consider sending me a voicemail. We also have a form at trek.fm/contact if you'd like to send me email. That comes to me that way. Before I let you go, I would like to remind you about our sponsor for today's show, Audible.com. They are the best source of audiobooks that you're going to find anywhere. I've been a customer for 14 years. I love Audible, and I know you will too. And as a Trek FM listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice just for trying out the service. If you go to audibletrial.com/TrekFM and sign up, you can choose any book you want absolutely free. If at the end of the trial you decide not to stick with Audible, there's nothing to lose because you get to keep that book. But again, if you like podcasts, I know you're going to love audiobooks, and there's no better place to get them than Audible. So support the show and support the network by trying them out at audibletrial.com/TrekFM, and we really thank Audible for their support of the show and the network. Well, thanks again to James and Matthew for joining me today, and thank you for listening. Join me again next time on this continuing mission, and let's see what's out there.